Hello and welcome to Heroes of the Horn, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Ezra, the voiceless or the fading wow. voice, however you want to call it. It's going quickly. I could use, as you said earlier, some of that Nynaeve healing.
As I am here, man, and you know, I can hear it in the voice or the lack thereof. It's almost like your voice, my friend, has been gentled.
Oh,
just like low gain. Wow.
Oh.
What a fantastic episode. And let me tell you guys something. So I just watched this. I know we're in this live stream. I just jumped in. Yes. And we were doing this live here on YouTube as well. Absolutely. Drink some gravy. Why? Because it's Thanksgiving. Okay.
Let's go.
And you know what I'm thankful for? I am thankful that we have this Wheel of Time show. I'm thankful that we have a lot of people in here watching live, hanging out.
Yeah.
It is all great. I'm thankful I get to talk with my good buddy Ez about the Wheel of Time. So let me tell you, Ez, just quick little recap of what we saw in this week's episode. We start off with Loghain in Gael'don, as we call it now, per the show, Gael'don. I thought the opening scene was awesome. Just a little. We see the dagger he uses. You see, I love that they showed us more of the corruption of the male half. I liked that some of the lore we got this episode was that being explained. A lot of interesting stuff. Now, I know the majority of this focus was sort of on Loghain and the, you know, the Aes Sedai, that group, Nynaeve and Moraine. But I did like that we jumped around a little bit. The Perrin Egwene section with the Tinkers. Perrin using the hammer. We're already beginning the hammer and the hammer and the axe. Rand and Matt. We're beginning to see Matt's sickness. And I gotta say, I really like and appreciate the way they're doing it, where he's almost like coughing up this like darkness, This like dark energy, whatever you want to call it. Loved the episode overall, and we'll dive into everybody's comments here and everything here in a second. Where does this stack up for you, Ez? For me, I don't know, man. So far, I genuinely like all four episodes.
Yes.
This might be my second favorite. Like, none of the episodes I think are bad at whatsoever. So I would say I think this is my second favorite. I think episode three is my favorite still so far. Just tons of fun, in that episode. I thought the Dark Friend was great, everything. So I think I like this one probably the second most because it's a little, I like the drama. I'm here for the drama.
Just like, you know,
on TNT, right? We are the drama. And so I like the way we did lore and everything. Like, we got to see the male side of the power. But let me tell you something pretty interesting is I was watching this. Normally I watch the episodes by myself, nobody around. But we were over at Thanksgiving dinner, and my fiance, Teresa, her stepmom, has been watching it. And she was talking to me about it. And of course, she knows literally nothing about the books, is only watching the show. They all believe that Nynaeve is the dragon. So I think
it is
working. I think sometimes we need, again, this is one of the things we talk about, which is once you've read the books and I would say that the majority of people in this stream watching, and everything, we are like the hardcore book group, We're all hardcore book group and everything. So sometimes we sort of view things like, I'm viewing this right now, and I'm like, I literally was thinking to myself, I was like, I swear to God, if they make Nynaeve the dragon, I might go burn down Jeff Bezos' house. Okay. I'm like, that is extreme. That is too far. But then I sort of, you know, I was thinking about it, and I think that the way they're doing this is really cool, especially for people who don't know anything about it, because they're wondering, they need that. So this is, you know, the thing that made Game of Thrones so great was nobody knew how it was going to end. And that's what built the excitement, because the books, I know we can trash the books and say, you know, we're Game of Thrones guys, but you can look at it and say the books not being out is what built all the suspense, because nobody knew what was going to happen. Well, this is a story where we have everything out. And so how do you build that suspense? Mm-hmm. And I think you do it by saying, who is the dragon? So for the people who haven't seen it right now, they're all like, oh, I think Nynaeve's the dragon.
Right.
And that is cool.
Yes.
It's a cool way to do it.
Matt, I said this, if you're a book reader and you're a fan of the series and somebody comes up to you, let's say you're a bitter book, you're like, you're a purist and you're bitter at the show right now. And someone comes up to you on Monday and says, man, who this show, right? Like, it's awesome. That's your opportunity to say, all right, if you like this, right, the books are awesome. Come with me, take them under your wing, and then turn that frown upside down and say, let's talk about this. And I mean, somebody said earlier in the comments that they're a book reader, but they love being surprised. Yes. This show still has surprises for book readers, and they're not taking away from the spirit of the series. It's still the spirit is in the characters, and it's there. My God, it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way they're doing it is one of the things that we've talked about on our podcast is we're still going through the books, right? We for those of you, especially a lot of guys, we have a lot of people in here tonight. What Ez and I ultimately do is we're going through the books, and you know, we're covering the show as well. And so it's my first read. So I'm at about, we just finished book 5. I'm in book 6. Just starting book 6. And, you know, it feels like it takes quite a bit of time to start getting their sort of powers and things going. And I loved actually the way they did Nynaeve. Nynaeve gets like super upset, hulks out, as I sometimes say. Mm-hmm. I sometimes joke that Nynaeve is the Hulk, because when she gets angry, that's when her power explodes. And I think what we're going to realize is all of these characters are 5 characters, right? Our Emmonfield 5, you want to get... They are all crazy powerful. That doesn't mean they're the dragon, because there's only one dragon. But I think you'll begin to see, you know, that a lot of these characters are crazy powerful. I mean, we haven't even, just think about this. They just showed you how strong Nynaeve is, right? At least just booming into her power.
Yep.
We saw Rand with the door.
Yep.
And you know, they're talking about how it's like a fraction of the power. So first of all, if that's sort of a little bit of Nynaeve's power coming out, just wait until you see Egwene's power come out, okay?
Right.
And then just wait until you see Rand's power come out. It's like...
Yeah, yeah. And dude, Matt, that's the thing. I think there's opportunity there to kind of... So Moraine is confused. The Dark One, they have this conversation. Like, Lan comes in. Is he the dragon? He's not the right age. They're talking about Loghain. Doesn't seem right. Now, what happens if the Red Aja gentles the dragon before we can get to him? Then, man, so they're confused. We're confused. And I just think this is great. Like, you have this sort of back and forth where we don't know. They don't know. So every time someone shows off their powers, now Moraine and the group is going to be like, okay, it's this person. You know, Loghain now thinks what he thinks. Loghain's looking, saying like, oh my God, this is, you know, this is it. This is who I should follow. Also, Matt, real quick, one more thing on the confusion aspect and the idea of the dragon. We were talking about it in here earlier during the live stream. There is this idea with, remember how I asked you, have there been female dragons in the past who proclaim themselves?
Probably. Well,
right? And what they did today, the voices that Loghain was hearing, male and female voices that he said were other versions of the dragon that were helping move him. Now, we know it's the corruption. We get all of that. But in his mind, he believed that at one point there could have been a female dragon, because he heard a female dragon's voice. You know what I mean? So in the history and the lore, it's there. I'm okay with it. I get people might be a little upset about it, but it is what it is. I think it's fine.
The simple fact that we actually get to talk right now about the idea that they're actually causing general confusion about who is the dragon is something that means to me that the show, that to me, yes, that is definitely somewhat of a departure of the books, but that is something for a television adaptation that will have longer lasting success.
Yeah,
and that's what this ultimately is. It's a TV adaptation. I know a lot of book purists have been really sort of upset by it, and I get that. I mean, there are people that don't like the Lord of the Rings trilogy because they say like it was too big of a departure from the books. You know, as a comic book fan myself, nothing departs things more than comic books. I mean, my God, it's like, go look at all of the different, we've had 3 Spider-Man, right? We've had 3 different tellings of Spider-Man's origin story, and they're done differently. And, you know, Superman, Batman, they've all been done differently. My God. I mean, yeah. I could make an argument that the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe shouldn't even count because the X-Men aren't part of it. So they were literally limited by having not being able to use Spider-Man for a good majority of it. They haven't used the X-Men at all, unless you sort of count, you know, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, whatever. But they still made a $1 billion franchise,
right,
and one of the greatest movies of all time. So, it's going to be different than the books. But so far, as I'm loving it, man.
I know.
Loving all of it.
I know
this episode was great, and I think it's also a great mid season. This is the middle of the season. Remember, we're sure. Now halfway through. And so far, to me, it feels promising, and it feels like I can't wait to see what this looks like 2 to 3 seasons in, once we get things sort of going.
Yeah, and I said this earlier too. I think, like, to hear Rafe come out, the showrunner, and say, "Guys, I wanted a 2-hour opener. I wanted 10 episodes. I fought for the Song of Manetherin, to stay in, to have that moment." He's fighting for these moments that he thinks are gonna help book readers and purists to get to the show and really love it. And I'm gonna, I don't know when you want to bring this up, but I want to bring up one. I had to scroll way back here
I did see one, and I want to find it here to give credit to whoever said it, but somebody said, yes, there were a few little, just real quick, and we'll go to like the big stuff. There were a few things that I definitely thought was funny that you would only get if you were a book reader. Like, one was the difference of like dogs versus cats, right? In the White Tower. And another one is the way Leandrin says like Nynaeve. She specifically says her name wrong, which is totally a like shout out to the book people. Totally something. So there's definitely little fan service, but it still sort of works. Everything. So yeah, you can go into, we can start going into some deeper things here, because there's a lot, and we'll be here for a bit.
Yeah. So okay, I had folks, and you guys, as you're coming in here, feel free to leave us a comment and let us know your favorite thought, something you want to focus on.
And real quick, if Forever's in here, we got 70 people in here, which is absolutely insane to even think about. But you guys could all do us a favor and like that smash button, or smash that like button, because it does helps boost the
get more folks YouTube in
algorithm. So yeah, we could always appreciate that. Yeah. A donation for the Gleeman, really.
Oh my God, that's all it is. That's all it is. appreciate that. And then also, friends, we do a live chat with our patrons too, which we'll do a live stream later this weekend for our patrons. But with that, Matt, holy smokes, there are too many moments to cover. I actually have a doc that I pulled up over here. I wrote down some stuff before you got in here. Like, a couple things we're going to go over. The way of, I'm going to list off all these, and we can go in any order. It doesn't matter. The Way of the Leaf, the emotions, the things that were said, Isla, Rain, Aram, all of it was fantastic. Right. Good connections there. We've got Rand's dream sequence. We've got Matt's sickness, Brigitte's silver bow. Matt as
lost it.
Matt as a caretaker and some of the stuff that he has going on there. Tom's connection to his nephew, Owen. I think it is Owen.
Yep.
Pretty sure.
Yep.
The Red Aja have been out gentling men, Matt, without a trial. By the light, that is, what is going on? You've got the Green Aja, the connections with their warders. Aes Sedai in the old tongue means servant. How does that make you feel? And Nynaeve asked them. It makes them feel proud. Matt, proud that they are with their Aes Sedai. So many things. I brought up one earlier too, was just the connection between Nynaeve and Lan. I mean, that was for me
the beginning.
That was one of the biggest takeaways. It got me when she prayed with him, and it was the last thing her parents said to her was the last thing. Malkier reference, King Queen.
I genuinely love the way they are doing world building in this show so far. And I remember seeing something, maybe it was an IGN article or something, where they were talking about how like they really had to fight to get that Manetherin song in there in episode two. I really love the way they are doing the world building and sort of explaining the history and everything. And it's so cool because it's like our Emmonfield Five, right? They'll say something And then it's Lan and Moraine are always caught off guard by it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How do you even know that? Right. Which right. is interesting because that does happen in the books. Now it happens at different places and different times, but again, that spirit of the books is there. And I like that it's happening. And I really love the way they did it this week with Nynaeve praying and talking about how it's the last thing that her parents did for her. And that's sort of what the whole prayer is about.
Matt, the connection it was wonderful. And I can't speak the freaking old tongue, although it sounds like, you know, maybe if I conjured up enough of this phlegm, I might be able to. We shall go into the land so our children can always hold us and we'll never be alone. That is what the interpretation is that Lan gives to her. We shall go into the land so our children can always hold us and we'll never be alone. There's actually a full circle connection, because this is the Wheel of Time, a full circle connection back to the Way of the Leaf, where Isla says when the leaf falls, right, it goes to the soil. It helps the soil. I mean, it helps other things grow, right? It can be like it's this whole kind of cyclical thing that I think is really cool and interesting. I don't know, man.
Yeah. And I will say, I was trying to remember. Yeah, this episode, by the way, was the episode that was written by Dave Hill, who did episodes for Game of Thrones. He wrote a few episodes. He did about four episodes of Game of Thrones. And again, I think the pacing in this episode was probably the best pacing, the jumping back and forth. But I think this is what the majority of the show actually going forward will look like now that we're all separated and we're all going to be going on our own adventures. And once, you know, we'll meet back up. But as we know in the books, they'll continue to sort of get spread out. And so I think they did a really, really good job with that. I absolutely loved this episode. And I know a lot of people, YouTube comment here, dragging down. Forget always wanted to see the world. So great. So great. And a lot of the people in the chat are saying, by the way, that this was a lot of people's favorite episode so far. So here's a great comment here. David Jones: I found it difficult to accept how anybody would follow the Way of the Leaf in the books. The explanation here, tying it to reincarnation and the wheel, was great. And I will agree with that, and I'll also say I like that they're beginning to explain the wheel a little bit more and just how it sort of works, and like the dragon has been born again and all of this stuff. So overall, I mean where does this episode rate for you?
Right now it's number one for me. Right now, and I get it. And that's probably just me coming right out. Whatever you want to call it. Just saw it. So episode number one was my favorite before this. I also liked three, you know, but episode one got me. I mean, it was like emotional, the whole thing, but this for me was my favorite episode so far. And it had so much, it is so jam packed. You cannot say that there was wasting screen time or dialogue or opportunities.
No.
It is jammed, packed with good information, hidden gems for book readers, stuff that helps non-book readers come in and say, what the heck is this? And who is the dragon? Was that her? Moraine's confused. Lan's confused. The whole thing. It's all there. Like, the doll is a big deal. Matt, that was the Grinwell farm they were at. We were trying to confirm that later. That was Els Grinwell, we were saying, probably is off at the tower. And that was her family that just got killed. Now, that's going to be an emotional thing later. They're setting up stuff later. Els is at the tower. They're setting this up.
Yeah. So it was great. It was great. And it's a little different, right? It's a little different because Tom Maryland is there. So Tom talking about Owen, right? That's been shifted a little bit, right? Yeah. But it works. This is one of the things we've talked about where we said, I genuinely feel like, you know, we know this, they're going to move stuff around. I like that we got backstory on Loghain, right? I like that we get to see him and Gael'don, as they call it now. And now I can stop saying Birgit Silverbow. It's Birgitta officially. Because it's
Birgitta.
In the audiobook, I feel like they go back and forth sometimes.
Right.
But Birgitta. I'm pretty sure they said it as Birgitta Silverbow. Yeah. So now So now we can officially put that one to rest. But yeah, the Birgitta doll got me a little misty. I thought it was great. And it was a cool way, again, that's foreshadowing, that's world building. Everything they're doing, man. And some people are saying here, Mike says, here, I feel the episodes have progressively gotten better, and that's where I'm at too. I genuinely feel like every episode is getting better and better, and I'm just more and more getting sucked into this, to this TV adaptation.
I am as well. And let me go back to something you said. The Way of the Leaf, when I first read the book series, I was with Perrin, like, why would anybody believe in this? It is beyond this life. It is a turning of the wheel. It is for ages to come. I mean, that was the whole thing. Matt, when she said, oh my God, and you guys, if you have any dialogue or lines or quotes in the live chat, please put them in here. Because when she said she wanted revenge, but the best way to get revenge with violence was peace.
That was great.
The
other cool thing about it is knowing what we know a little bit further in the books, when you learn the origin of the Tinkers, right? And their connection to their past. To me, that even made that, which I won't spoil here, but that made that even more awesome. Because we know where the Tinkers come from in the books, and so, and their connection, and their connection to a certain group. I was almost like, wow, because the other group is such the opposite way, right?
Yeah.
And that's it's like, no, we sort of the fact that it's the other way around. We fight, you know, sort of violence with love, like in a different way. It's because, you know, sometimes you hear that and you're like, okay, get these hippies out of here, or, you know, whatever. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but the way she explained it as this, like, what better way? You know, it was great.
It's an extreme way of life. Even though it's this pacifist lifestyle, it is the complete opposite to a very extreme form of, you know, like violence. So it was just a show.
And she said it too. Yeah. I got a comment here. I don't want to put the whole comment up just because I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but yeah, she's how they pulled out the spear, right? Was the mm-hmm. cool. That was definitely a great there. So shout out to Sean who put that in there. Yeah, super, super awesome way of doing that. And some of the Tinkers are pulling on Perrin in a big way, especially after what he's been through. And her going through the weapons, right? An axe. Yeah. And then she knew, you had something with the axe. And then she sort of asks him, and like, mm-hmm. what did that do for you?
Exactly, man. It brought nothing. Like, again, yeah, had that not have come, like, his wife would still be here, maybe. We don't know whether the child thing, we don't really know what was going on there. But man, yeah, whole life was cut short because of it, and someone near and dear and precious to him. And he is reeling with that. I mean, every episode I'm watching Perrin just, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, don't forget that happened. Like, it's just, it's with him every step of his journey. And it's just, yeah, wild. While we're on the Tinkers, real quick. So Aram, Matt, when he says, so his story, I was telling folks, we know where Matt's at, and Matt's, again, this is a good point here. Aram later on in the series, you know this, he, and I'm sorry, this is spoiler, I've marked the whole episode, this whole thing as a spoiler, because he picks up that sword later on. Right now, he says, the wind blows some leaves, right? It's like the wind blows some of them out. A lot of them return and come back, but who is he to fight against the wind if it blows him to this other path? There were so many, the dialogue and the writing in it, it was just so good. It was so good.
It was fantastic, man. I have to watch it again because I was watching it with people talking and all that stuff. Yeah. Also, let me say something really quick. So this was something I noticed, just sort of on the CG, right? Cause I know sometimes we've said things about it. I watched today's episode on normally I watch it on my, I've been watching it on my monitor, or I have a projector. And today I watched it on like a 4K TV. And you know how sometimes 4K TVs will like overanalyze, or it can sort of do like the upscaling stuff where like sometimes you watch old movies and they feel weird, right? Because the way it sort of how it processes it, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I'll say I watched it today and I was like, the CG feels weird and looks like off. Like the scene in the woods.
Yeah.
I was like, this looks like low budget and everything. But then really? I was like, Yeah. I was sometimes when you watch stuff on like on 4K TVs, it will do that depending on the thing, where sometimes it overanalyzes stuff. Yeah. And I've often felt that sometimes it actually you can lose a little bit of the artistic fidelity in it, mm-hmm. By sort of over processing things. And so just so for some of the people that have sort of had issues with the CGI and stuff, I'd say try watching on like a different monitor or something like that, because I noticed that this episode, and that's the first time I've watched it on a TV, mm-hmm. as opposed to like a monitor or whatever. And sometimes I'm just saying, I've noticed that when you watch like old movies on a 4K TV, it's like something's going on here. It feels weird.
Yeah. And honestly, there were other comments earlier from folks who said, you know, it felt like a CW battle scene. But what's nice and what I'm liking about these comments is that that's not the end of their comment, which is still they're carried away by the story. They're so right. caught up in the dialogue and the action that it didn't take them out of it. You know what I mean? They noticed it, because I don't really have an eye for that kind of thing. I mean, that's something Matt notices.
I do. Yeah, I'm definitely, you know, somebody where it's like I game.
Yeah, you're a visual.
Gamer, right? I'm a gamer. Yeah. So it's like, trust me, I can tell you the difference between 24 frames a second, 30 frames a second, 60 frames, you know, like right. all that, you know, 1440p versus 4K. And then even certain monitors have different kind of like color palettes and all this stuff. And
we've let the freaking dark one out here, and Matt, he's
right. So no, I'm just saying it is definitely it is something that sometimes so I'm saying some people who may have had issues with the way it looked, now I get what they're saying, because I watched it on a different format than I have before, so I can see that I can certainly see the argument there. So
yeah. I wanted to real quickly, Matt, if you don't mind, I'm gonna pull up a couple comments here. So Marcus Rutherford plays Perrin. And I thought this was really important, because he does not have a whole lot of lines. But what he's doing with his body language, his demeanor, eye gaze, all of that. And the direction on it is probably just fantastic. Like whoever's, you know, directing this episode, I forget who it is. Awesome. There's so much that they're conveying in his body language, and he's just doing a great job. And he is absolutely a genius in his role. He has the least amount of lines of anyone and is among the most powerful of the entire cast in terms of, his acting and just what he's conveying to the audience. Like every time he's on screen, I'm just like, are you okay? Like, I'm like Egwene, like give him a hug. I'm just so worried about him.
Yeah. And man, let me just say really quick too, one of the other things I really loved about this episode is they started to explain the warders, the different Ajahs, right?
Oh God, we got to talk about that.
And they began to explain the warder connection with the Aes Sedai, which actually worked for two things here. Mm-hmm. One, it worked because we see an Aes Sedai die, and so mm-hmm. we begin to get that. And then also we see, wow, looks like some of the Aes Sedai are with their warders, intimate. Yes. And so then that's interesting, because then Nynaeve sort of asks, she's like, wait, are the three of them? And then he kind of looks at her and smirks, and then Lan's like, well, maybe I should go.
Yeah.
And so then I think we get to see Nynaeve be like, oh, maybe they are like intimate together. And then we are already beginning to get a little bit of the Nynaeve Lan relationship. So it was really interesting, because you introduce it here, and then it actually allows you to create and sort of lift these other storylines up, multiple storylines, by doing it here. So I think it's great for the middle of the season. Now, real quick, mega change here. I mean, you want to talk about total departure from the books.
Yeah.
In no segment of the books does Loghain like murder everyone and is saved by Nynaeve. So big departure. But again, I thought it was cool, because I was like,
I loved it. I freaking loved it.
Think about where we're at now, Ez. I'm gonna be honest. We just finished book 5, right? Yeah. Of 13, right? Yeah, 13 plus New Spring. Mm-hmm. We just finished book 5. Nynaeve hasn't even become close to that powerful yet in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know she'll get there, but
yeah.
I think the way they're doing some of the speeding stuff up, I'm fine with.
Right. So, and Matt, what they do in the books is they often say it's dialogue. It's this Aes Sedai saying
14 total. Is it? Yeah. Is it 14 plus New Spring, or is it 13 plus New Spring? Which would, you know,
I think it's 14. Yeah. But what the Aes Sedai typically say, oh, she's stronger than anyone in the tower, or this person's stronger than this person. It's typically done in dialogue, or when someone's channeling, there's commentary on that channeling. Now, for us, we need to see it. For the audience, they need to see it. So to show her do something that like other Aes Sedai, like Karina Nagashi, had difficulty shielding Loghain and then healing Moraine. So that's, and she's this very powerful member. And it's like, okay, now Nynaeve comes in and does something in an emotional, angry moment. Like Leandrin almost burns herself out. Did you see the glowing around her face?
That was like, really cool.
She almost, that, and I, again, what does that look like? Can you burn yourself out completely? Can you bring in so much of the one power that you just burn it out of you? I didn't know what that would look like. They showed us that. It's talked about all the time in the books. I don't know that we actually ever see anybody do it in the books. I can't remember, but by God, she almost does. And we got to see it. So we need that.
Well, it actually does a few things, because we've already seen, so far we've already seen Moraine use like all the power she can, right? I mean, she's wrecking Trollocs in the first episode. And then we sort of see Lan talk about like, you know, you can't go on, basically, type of thing. Like explaining to her, like, we need to get out of here. And she's like, light, give me strength. So the fact that we see Moraine in episode one do like some pretty crazy stuff with the power. I mean, she literally tears down a building, right? You're showing like just how powerful these people are. Then in this episode, we're seeing Moraine and Leandrin and everybody fight this army and also sort of hold down Loghain.
Yeah.
So by doing that, you're showing just how powerful they are. I think you're really building the Aes Sedai up to be powerful, but also at the same time show their sort of limitations. So to then have Nynaeve do what she did, it's like, okay, now you're really beginning to set up the idea that the Emmonfield Five is very special and very powerful. And I ultimately feel like that's the way it's going to go, where I think what they're doing is they're setting up the Emmonfield Five to just seem as if they are that much more powerful than everybody else, which is what ends up happening. Right.
Yeah. Which is cool. And so what the tower wants to do is they want to acquire, and they know that their strength in the books is dwindling like a little bit. So to them, it's very important. Like when Varen goes to the Two Rivers and she finds more, I mean, Matt's sisters and so on, she goes and finds them and says they can channel. Like the old blood is strong. That's why Manethrin, that story of Manethrin and the old blood and the connection there is so important for later on, because this village is important and it's special in some way. So, yeah.
Yeah. Real quick question here. Generally speaking, because I'm curious about this. Is there any chance they actually make Nynaeve the Dragon Reborn? I mean, to me, that's like, that would be like, there's just no way.
No, there's not. And again, I marked this spoiler for everybody. Like they're doing a good job of just moving us around. I think people can leave comments. Let me know. I hope it goes on for a while, Matt. I hope maybe even there's a departure from the book. If you're going to, they've already departed from the books. So if you depart a step further, show us then.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Right. No, right. Bringing her into the White Tower and saying she could be like, she could be the one, or you get back to Egwene does something. Maybe Egwene's before they get to the White Tower, it could be that Egwene does something. Right. And now she's
in this episode. Remember that Tom on the other side, I know it's hard to sort of think about this because we just saw, Nynaeve go Super Saiyan essentially.
Absolutely.
Nynaeve goes Super Saiyan. And then, then do that. But in the same episode, Tom is telling, you know, Rand, I think Matt might be the Dragon are born, right? I mean, or something like he has all the signs.
He has all the signs. Like a male channeler, someone who can channel the one power. And so you're thinking, okay, that could be the guy. Because again, just because Egwene, it's said that she can speak to the wind or that the wind will listen to her, as Moraine says. Rand doesn't know what that is necessarily.
Right? She did. Spirit she did. She basically did a spirit bomb.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah.
But well, you know, in episode one, Moraine really does the spirit bomb because she's like, light, give me strength. And she's like pulling the energy out of the building and everything.
Yeah. That's freaking awesome. Yeah. So, but again, just because I think they know Aes Sedai exist. And so to the point right now that Egwene is just mentioned as being able to channel, all we saw was a little spark with Perrin. So now if she gets in a position, like, so what I'm thinking, Matt, they're putting them in positions where their backs are against the wall and they have to use the power. There's no other option. Matt, what did you think when Lan's throat was slit?
Well, this was
really
funny.
Dying.
So again, really, because I was watching it, over at Thanksgiving dinner, and my fiance Teresa's stepmom, who she watched the show because she's heard me talking about it, and she's always asking me, like, you know, what podcasts you do and all this stuff, right? And I said, so she said she watched the first three episodes, and she said, she's like, oh my God, she's like, and she doesn't know the actor's name, but she's like, oh my God, she's like the Asian actor because she's Asian, and so. She's like, I love Daniel Henney. She doesn't know his name, but because he's in, I think he was like Criminal Minds or something like that.
Okay.
And I guess he came in later to the season, whatever show he was on before. And so she's like, oh my God, I loved him. And so she was like, she's like, you have to tell me right now whether he makes it or not, because if he dies, I'm out. She's like, wow. She's like, I'm out of the whole series. She's like, because I love that guy. And I was like, oh, yeah, you'll be fine. And then he literally gets his throat slit. I'm like,
oh, yeah,
freaking out.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, sorry. I was like, and so then Nynaeve healed everybody.
Right.
So real quick, because a lot of people are asking about this. First of all, we have one question in here. David saying, can I talk about spoilers for the entire series? So right now, technically, our podcast is at, we just finished book 5. So that's where I don't have knowledge actually really beyond that. So I don't personally have an issue with it, but I won't know what you're talking about. But that's where we kind of keep stuff, is where we're at the podcast. But I mean, it's all free game. There's a lot of people in here. Anything could be said.
And,
so.
And actually what might happen, I mean, not Rafe said through books 1 through 3, right? But God, season 2, who freaking knows, Matt? They're moving stuff around. That's why we move through this. But what you said to me the other day was really important. You were like, as somebody could say something about something that happens in book 8 or book 9, and there's so much in between that, I don't know how it's going to happen. You could tell me it happens, and I could say, I have no idea how we get there or the context around it. So it doesn't hurt too much because it's a huge series.
Right. So real quick question, because a lot of people are talking about this, talking about Loghain being able to see Nynaeve use the power.
Right. So he can see. I thought either they either messed up there a little bit, because earlier Moraine,
just changing it.
Yeah, but earlier Moraine says he's just sitting there still. I've never thought about, like, he's channeling, but I can't see it. So they made it very clear that the women could not see the men channeling. So at the end, he does see her channel. So I don't know if they just kind of, that's a continuity issue inside of the show, this episode, or if it's actually something like men can see females channel, or he just saw the effects of her channeling. But it seemed like that the sun was referenced in bright light. I'm actually okay if they can see it.
Right.
To be honest, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. It didn't really do a whole lot. I don't know. I think also, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, you could almost get on a technicality where he did just see her basically heal a bunch of people that he just killed. And so maybe his reference about her using the, like, because the reference about it, yes, I know it was bright like the sun, but it was also, you could also, just if you wanted to sort of retcon it later down the line or something, you could say, like, well, yes, she used a little, what she used, the power sort of exploded out of her and just healed all of these people. So you could do it, but I think they're just, I don't know. To me, it's fine if they can see each other channel, because that's, to me, that's not like the biggest, most important deal to keep from the books. I think it's probably cooler if they can.
Yeah, if they can. Here's the thing, too. We, the audience, had to see that. So you can't be like low gain looking at it and not see it. And then we have to be able to see him channeling.
You have to be able to see it as for a visual medium. Yeah.
You have to. You can't just be like, oh, what happened? Like nothing happened. You know what I mean? So that's where people have to accept some change.
Yeah, because it's not, because again, television isn't POV like the books are.
Yeah.
Right. It's one of those where like we saw it doesn't necessarily mean he saw it in the way we see it, but
he could feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I'm sure at some point we will get like a channeler versus another channeler, male versus female, pushing back on each other, and we'll see it. But technically, you know, in theory, they wouldn't. But so that's just a television thing. Yeah. So yeah, being able to see each other's power level is an improvement, allows for a lot of plot later. Yeah, exactly. It's television. There's really no other way to get around it except to show you Logan. You go first person camera on Logan and have him using it, and first person camera on somebody else, you know. Just
that'd be weird.
Television's different. It's just things have to look different. So
Let me go back here real quick. What did you think about, so I want to mention something, Matt, and this is something I said earlier before Matt got on the show. But his situation, he cares about that little girl. It reminds him of his sisters. And this is a mild spoiler for later for Matt. This is not going to hurt Sir Matt to know this, but Matt in his personality develops a caretaker role kind of for a young individual later in the series. And they're setting that up both ways, his sisters. And then going forward, he has a soft spot for those children. And it just kind of reminds him of his sisters. And are they at home being taken care of by your mom and dad? He's thinking probably not. And I'm away from them. I want to get back home. Yeah. So
did you think, by the way, that Matt killed those people? When they first, I did too.
I was like, holy.
Initial shock, I was like, wait, what? Matt was in there. Yeah, with the dagger. I like the way they're doing it.
Yeah.
You're
surprised, right? Because for a moment, you and I were like, what?
Whoa.
Right. And then the freaking fade has been there. I see you. Also, he could see that fade, right? Fades are very difficult to see in shadow. But he is poisoned, my friend, by the shadow of Shadar Logoth, right? So
Tom Maryland straight up just fought it. Like, bring it on, bitch.
I mean, dude, like, that was crazy. That fight was actually pretty, because it felt like heavy. I mean, it felt like blows were being exchanged there. It felt like a really heavy fight. I don't know how to explain it, but it was
now, real quick, just because, again, that was like, did Tom escape with them?
No,
we didn't see Tom. We didn't see Tom escape with them.
They left it kind of like what they do in the book, where it's sort of like they're separated, because Matt, he was trying to take them away from Tar Valon. Possibly he was hinting at Matt should not go back to them.
Right.
They're going to gentle him like they did Owen, even though we know it's.
And we did. Different. And we did see Rand pushing back on him a little bit earlier with Matt. Like, why are we listening to this guy?
Right. Right.
Right.
So okay. Now they're off on their
own. Just making sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So. Crazy. So we'll have to see where that goes. But again, people are probably thinking like, oh shoot, what happens to that guy? You know, he didn't show his death or anything, but
right.
Probably assume he might die or might move on.
So that, I mean, so if you want to go that route, then because we haven't seen Tom in any of the other stuff, right? Any of the other promotional material. Cause that's one of the things we were talking about. We're like, so is he gonna continue on with them? Right, because he was already introduced. He was already introduced late. So even actually, that's another. So there we go. So let's just assume that they are Tom. We don't see Tom again this season. So there's an arc that you moved around, mm-hmm. right? Because technically, if we just get to the end of the Eye of the World and maybe a little into the Great Hunt, we wouldn't see Tom again season one. We wouldn't see him until season two.
Sure.
Right, when we meet back up with him, which will probably be in a different place, but. You know, whatever. Where do they meet back up? No, not Tyr. Faldara.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wait, who?
Tom, where we run into him in the Great Hunt when they're playing Deus Namar.
Kyrian, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, you're right. Yeah. So technically we shouldn't see Tom again until season two. So now if we're done with Tom in season one, then there's an arc that there's our first sort of full arc a little bit that's been moved around.
Yeah.
Which is we didn't get Tom in episode one where he should be and then split up with them. And so by doing that, you gave his story a little more time to breathe, which I think was good for television.
Yeah.
And the ending, yes, was slightly different the way his story goes in season one compared to the books, but it still goes along with the story. When he comes back, it can still be done in the same way.
Right.
And you just moved it around for television. And is it that big of a difference from the books? No, still works. It's still fine.
Right. And there will be I think he's going to, when he meets back up, it's either at the end of the season. It could actually be later.
End of season one. Right.
It could be revealed he's still around and there's something where we kind of move on with that. You know, there was a teaser for this episode where they showed, the Keeper of the Chronicles, who was saying, bring forth the false dragon, right? We didn't see that. So we didn't get that far. Obviously that's coming up in a later episode where we're going to go before the Omerlin seat. Like, they've already gentled him. I kind of feel like,
by the way, did they say the Omerlin seat weird once in that episode? I feel like the first time they said it, it wasn't like, we've always called it the Omerlin seat. But yeah. I feel like the way they pronounced it the first time was kind of different. So I need to go back and listen to that again.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if the cast also were just pronouncing stuff a little differently too between members, you know, which is fine.
Right.
But yeah, I just felt like, okay, then we're going to have a scene later where he's going to be brought before them, and that's going to be, you know, someone's going to have to explain why he was gentled before he was brought in, because he had a following. He wasn't just some random guy channeling. He had a following. He had a king of Galadon with him. So, yeah.
Let me pull this up here really quick. So now that we're a little bit more into this, let me pull this up. Okay, so remember, the episodes are sort of, the episode titles and descriptions are up on IMDb. So this one was The Dragon Reborn. Moraine struggles with uncertainty while Lan struggles with their new companion. Rand wonders about Matt. Egwene and Perrin take their first steps down a different path. An incredible new power is unleashed on the world. That was the little description we had going into it. And I was kind of like, okay, I feel like this might be a tame episode. Not so much, my friend. Mm-hmm. So next week, by the way, is the episode called Blood Calls Blood. Perrin and Egwene run into a familiar face. Matt and Rand see strange ones. Moraine and Lan mourn their loss. Now, this is the one I think we've seen in the trailer, right, where the warder is crying at the funeral pyre, right? He's kissing the ring. So I think we're going to get that. So here's the real question. Who's the familiar face?
Yeah, for Egwene, right? Egwene and Perrin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have two options.
Okay. Because I don't think are they getting all the way to Tar Valon in this next episode? They might.
No, I think they're still with the Tinkers wandering. Okay. I think it's likely they come across a peddler.
Oh.
But again, they didn't talk to Badon Fane.
Right.
Stefan, they know him. Stefan, yeah. Kyle here. This, I'm gonna go with what he said. I think we're gonna run to the White Cloaks next episode.
Holy, oh yeah. We did kind of see them being circled, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that. We saw that. So that'll be the familiar face that we'll see. God
and
dang.
And then wow, you're already pushing forward. They're really pushing forward, I think. The Perrin a White Cloak showdown.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think like it's all going down next episode and stuff like this, but I do think, yeah.
Yeah, this is good. Valda doesn't forget faces from Ben Butler, shout out. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, my God. Oh, yes. And then we did see this. We already saw this in the trailer. Yeah. Aram is on the ground next to them.
Yeah.
They're being circled. So what? Yeah. Do you think the White Cloaks would hurt the Tinkers? Or yes, do you think 100%, they
100%?
Yeah, okay.
100% I do. Cuz remember, it's Shadow Rising, where, you know, that's a big showdown between, when Perrin basically tells him, if you guys ever come back here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Big stuff happening. And well, we have to get, remember in the book, in the first book, he kills a couple White Cloaks.
Right.
And which is why originally he's taken by Jeffrey Bornhold and held. I think there was some leaked photos. Sorry, this is maybe too spoiler, that Egwene and him in a camp. So yeah, I think you're right. We'll see the White Cloaks coming up, which is great, man. The way they're doing the White Cloaks is got me like, holy, right. I'm scared of them.
So this is another one. So this was really, it was really interesting being able to talk to somebody, because especially now that the show is out, because it just, it opens it up to all these new people. Again, I'll reference it again. Talking to, her name's Leslie, which is my fiance's stepmom, and she's super into this. What, you know, knows literally nothing about the books. Not, I mean, whatsoever. She's like, okay, here's this new show Matt keeps talking about, I'll check it out. And she was asking about, she's like, wait, are there like a lot of factions? Because she's like, you know, the White Cloaks, basically, she didn't know. I was like, well, she's like, they're like the men in white wearing like cloaks. I'm like, yeah, they're called the White Cloaks. Like, you know, like,
right.
Again, you know. And so I was like, yeah, I was like, theoretically, they're good guys. Right. But right. Then I sort of explained it. And so, yeah, sort of gets it. So, yeah, they're like, we're going to purge it. So I think, yeah, we're probably seeing White Cloaks next episode, which is great, because we're just beginning to build this world more and more, in that, you know, just because they say they fight for the light doesn't mean they do. Just because they seem like they're good guys could be dark friends.
Let me just Dark Ones taint here. Is this, I forgot about this, the Dark Friends Social. If that's true, please confirm this in the comments. That's interesting. I think I do. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Moving on. The Tuathon, man. Scary. Scary stuff if that's the case. But yeah, we'll see someone. We're going to see. So no Elias. We've already got the connection built up with the wolves. Perrin knows what's happening. Unfortunately, we probably won't see him. We could see him later, maybe. But yeah, so we'll have them showing up with the White Cloaks. So my question is, how do they get rescued? Like Lan and Moraine and Nynaeve could still swing back around and do the whole rescue thing on their way to Tarvalen.
They seem so far away. So the next episode, by the way, episode 6, is called The Flames of Tarvalen. Moraine faces the consequences of her actions. Matt faces the darkness in himself. Egwene faces the most powerful woman in the world. So at that point, I think somehow by episode 6, it seems likely that Egwene will be facing down Suwan.
Oh, yes, yes.
If she, well, yeah. I think that's what they're saying there. She faces down the most powerful woman in the world, which would be Suwan.
Right. And do you remember there was one of the trailers, Egwene is standing in that hall and Nynaeve comes through the door and she's like, Nynaeve. And she runs over and gives her that hug. So we know we're going to get that. But it's just like, did Lan go off on his own and with Nynaeve to rescue Egwene and Perrin? And did Moraine go do, you know what I mean?
Because she felt like they lost them. Yeah. Maybe what they'll do is Moraine. I don't know. If Moraine goes with the rest of the Aes Sedai back to Tarvalen,
yeah,
and Lan goes off with Nynaeve, because maybe they'll explain. Remember how Nynaeve just sort of kind of knows, mm-hmm. like where people are, mm-hmm. right? Like they didn't do the coins, so we can't get on that route. But maybe now that Nynaeve just used her power. Moraine will talk. I'm guessing Moraine's going to talk to her this next episode, and all of the other Aes Sedai women that are there are going to be like, what was that?
Yeah, what's up?
And
yeah.
Then exactly. And so then Nynaeve will sort of use the power a little bit, and like, we're just going to really speed her story along. And she's can say like, well, I've always just sort of known where it is. Because remember, Lan has asked her, how did you track me?
How?
And yes. And she hasn't told them. And I feel like, first of all, there's no way that Lan is just sort of tracked by somebody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I feel like it's the, because she finds them at Shadar Logoth, where everyone else happens to be.
Right.
If everyone else is gone, I don't think she would be able to just sort of track them. So I think they're going to go with that. And then I think maybe Lan and Nynaeve go off to chase down Egwene and Perrin. which then gives us a little bit of time for them to be alone and build that storyline a little bit, you know, have a conversation on horseback or whatever. And then Moraine will go with the rest of the Aes Sedai back to, back to Tar Valon.
Yeah. And actually then I'm a second guessing myself even a little bit here too, because of the clip we saw where she was surprised to see, Egwene was surprised to see Nynaeve.
Oh yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah. So maybe, cause you remember the clip I'm talking about where she, later. That could be much. We don't even know when that is. That could be.
No, that probably is. That probably is.
So then that means like maybe Moraine went after. I don't know, man. It's got me.
Maybe they do that. Maybe they do the trials or something. And it's like happy to see.
So yeah.
Maybe.
There's a second separation that will happen maybe or something. Right. I don't know. I wanted to mention real quickly though. So Amanda popped in here. And her energy is just exactly what we all have been feeling, which is, oh my God, just finished the episode when Nynaeve went supernova, right? Been waiting on that for over 20 years.
Yeah, let me remind me of how this goes in the Eye of the World. Katie's saying here, she does track them in the books. Yes, she does. She does track them. But I believe it's because she has a bond. She has sort of this, she can sense them, right?
And I think someone said, I think it has to do with the healing that she, in the books, I think she heals Egwene. And I think she has some sort of bond with her. I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, in the comments. I can't remember. So maybe she got as far as Shadar Logoth. And also they said something about Nynaeve's tracking ability and like how her upbringing too. I think she's,
I will look for this. I don't remember the title of the chapter. But I sort of remember where it's like towards the middle of the Eye of the World.
So let me
pull this up. Yeah,
I do want to do so. So while you're pulling that up, let me talk about something. I'm gonna go on a tangent here for a little bit.
Yeah,
so,
right here, real quick. Sure. This is from Tar Valon Library, which is a great resource and is sort of like the wiki for this. Nynaeve, Lan, and Moraine also end up together. Moraine makes Nynaeve accept that she can channel by pointing out that she can sense her presence, and also that Nynaeve can sense the presence of someone who she has healed with the One Power. Exactly. Yeah. So again, and I think that they'll go down that route, and that's how she'll explain that she was able to track them.
Right. I do like the Moraine coin situation in the books. That was kind of cool that she could feel something with the coin. Matt, just to bring, because we're all hyped about this, we brought it up early on the show. I do want to bring up some of the negatives. So some people don't like it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah,
that's okay.
Let's talk about it.
Like I understand, because it is a. These are larger and larger steps away from the source material in terms of like the plot sequence, like the events. But I personally don't feel like they're huge steps away in the spirit, like the spirit of the series. Exactly. So that's just me. And I think you have to kind of take this, so this is just somewhat. So the Coin 85, I grew up reading these books. I'm severely disappointed already in the first three episodes. You know, it is what it is. And I hear people, my assistant principal was saying the same thing, kind of like, I'm not severely disappointed, but yet I'm kind of like not really sure yet. I want to wait and see. Like, I like the characters. I like the cast, loves some of the setting and things like that, but it's trying to get used to this shift, you know? So,
yeah, I've talked about it before, my older brother who listens to the podcast. So I'm sure he'll hear me talk this. He's calling it the Wheel of Crime.
Oh my gosh.
He's read the books like 100 times, and he's like, I just can't believe the Wheel of Crime. He's like, Rafe Judkins is committing crime. He's a criminal for what he is doing to this.
The crazy thing, okay, so I don't know if you know this, so Brandon Sanderson, Rafe tried to keep Brandon, I think, in on this more, and the studio kind of said there's something like with authors, and they go kind of, They were worried about that, like keeping him on, because they might push for things that don't have high ratings. Like when Ray fought to keep in the Manethrin song and some of the stuff that he's fought to keep, I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. I think he's doing a good job. And major shout out to him, because it's hard, guys. It's 8 episodes. He wants 10. He wanted a 2-hour opener. I mean, they cut all that stuff from him, and they tried to cut the Manethrin song, and he's trying to stick to the spirit of the show. So that's hard. He's in a hard spot, you know. Can he survive?
Well, they've already got 3 seasons, so I think he's doing okay. I mean, look, let's just face it. All right, Jeff Bezos
Right.
It's like, I'm giving you guys $10 million an episode. I have to go to outer space. Okay. So if you guys want somebody to blame old Jeff Bezos. All
right.
Because he has to go to space, and that costs more money than giving us, you know, every single thing we want for the show. So.
Right. Here's something too. As a book reader, I try to find, just like we have Katie in here, just talking about the idea that, as a book reader, like, there's surprises. Matt and I are surprised. You guys are surprised by some of these things. That's keeping me coming back going, what is next, man? If I just knew chapter by chapter, this is happening next, let's just see how they do it. I kind of like that I'm surprised by it, because it brings in that same Game of Thrones things. Like, I have no freaking clue what's happening next. So,
yeah, we know an intense, complex story can be told the first few seasons of Game of Thrones. Very little can be criticized. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll say though,
we're Game of Thrones guys. I mean, there's a lot of things I can point out that are different than the show. I guess, like, for me, even as somebody, I mean, obviously we run a Game of Thrones podcast,
right,
as well. I don't know. I think I gotta think about it for a second here, really quick, just to give it a comparison, because I think it's probably the fairest comparison is Game of Thrones and Wheel of Time, just because they're both sort of TV shows. I mean, first of all, I can say this in terms of like CGI and budget and stuff, go watch episode one of Game of Thrones and let's talk about Tyrion Lannister's, you know, surf blonde hair. Okay. I mean, the pilot of that show, you know, it's not,
yeah.
And we're Game of Thrones guys. Trust me, I'll defend Game of Thrones until the day I die. Even we season eight. Right, even season eight, which I know most people hate, but absolutely. But I would say that the scale is different. Game of Thrones doesn't need to go like CGI heavy and stuff like that till much later. They left out huge characters, even, you know, between seasons one through four. I mean, Lady Stoneheart wasn't a thing, Young Griff wasn't a thing.
Sure.
Even smaller characters, excuse me, Donald Noy. They move a lot of Tyrion stuff around to sort of fill in for guys at the wall. There's a lot. I mean, there's definitely a Matt, lot there too.
Matt, I want you to look at my screen here real quick, everybody. So you could stack. So Game of Thrones books are about the same size.
Yeah.
Okay. 5, 6. There's 14. There's 14 right. of these. They know they can't get that. They have an issue. They know this is going to be difficult to get through all this. So,
yeah, I would say though, I think the difference though, to be fair, is the difference of a Game of Thrones to even the Eye of the World is, for starters, the way they do chapters differently. Game of Thrones chapters are just straight one character's point of view, whereas Wheel of Time has you get a chapter and it can be multiple points of view. Even the storytelling is different. And then a lot of characters in Game of Thrones, for starters, don't even have point of view chapters. Like Robb Stark.
Sure.
By the way, we just cracked 100 people watching all at once. So thank you very much.
Let's go.
So in Game of Thrones, like Robb Stark doesn't even have point of view chapters. And then like characters like Sansa Stark and Arya Stark may not have their own chapter, but they'll both be in it. So a lot of it actually gets condensed, at least for television.
Sure.
Whereas Wheel of Time, it's the total opposite. It's like you'll have a chapter where it's like random Matt talking. Okay, now we're going to send Rand off this way and we're going to send Matt off this way. And it's like one chapter. So I do. They're different, I think, in that in that regard.
And I just want to say, too, because to the folks who are critical of the series, we're book fans, too. And I get you.
Yeah.
It definitely is a jarring a little bit. And I guess I've given up, right? I've just sort of said, let me just let the showrunner and the storytellers take me into a new this new path. And it's hard. It's hard for people to let go. So
yeah. The other thing I'll say really quick, and first of all, yes, Wheel of Time feels like a much different departure from from there's two differences though. One, Game of Thrones, even if Winds of Winter and A Wish for Spring were out, you're talking about 7 books mm-hmm. as opposed to 15 books, mm-hmm. right? And even at that time, the ending source material we still don't even have, right? Still doesn't exist. So you have a lot less to sort of work with. But yeah, I totally get even though it doesn't bother me as much, I do totally understand the people who are
who
feel like this is a big departure, because it is. It's not, and it feels. I mean, like Nynaeve just used the one power on low game. What?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, right. that's way different. So yeah, it is definitely a departure. And so I get it. I do get people. I guess I would say though is that let's at least I feel like give it a season. I mean, really for me, it's like I think a lot of shows I'm willing to give two seasons. And it's like if it doesn't get better in season two, because there's a lot of shows I've talked about this before where you go back and watch season one. It's a lot of even great shows season one are rough around the edges. And I use this as my prime example. The Office is considered to be one of the best shows ever. Go watch season one and it is like, wow, things are totally different. And it's only like six episodes. Then you get to season two and like that's when the show really begins to feel like the show that it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always give a show two seasons. Not every show is going to even, a lot of shows don't even have great seasons once. Right. It takes them like 2 to 3 seasons to even get in their groove. And we're only 4 episodes in.
Yeah, I'm pumped that season 3 has been greenlit and they're doing season, you know what I mean? Because we want more. We want more of this. There could be a course correction. There could be better CGI later. All that good stuff can happen. And I think it will happen. So,
yeah. Guess what I miss most from the books is the Tolkien innocence that the first book, book, and then watching the world develop into darker, deeper tones.
That's true. It does do that quicker. It gets there quicker. In the whole series, you have some pretty, you know, Trollocs chopping heads off and boiling people in pots, but that doesn't happen. It's hinted at darker things, and the reader can grow out of the eye of the world into the series. So,
yeah. I actually feel like the show is darker. Yeah. Darker than I thought it would be.
Me too.
I mean, episode one, when Layla's like coughing up blood, I was like, okay then. Cause we didn't know. Remember, we didn't know. We thought this was going to be, we didn't know where to go. I wish Lan was larger and armored like he was on the cover of the book. That was one we were saying too. We were kind of like, man, I don't know if like Lan's supposed to be like Arnold and Conan. But Lan to me, I like the way he looks and everything is actually the one. To be honest, I think he's my favorite transition. I think he looks the coolest.
Yeah, and here's the thing too. As this goes on over 8 episodes, certain characters and their how it's being done will suck you in. So like Marcus saying. Right. Gets sucked in when Tom first makes his appearance. But then in the last episode, you know, it was the parent tinker storyline that he didn't really like, which.
Yeah. And know. actors will change over time. I mean, I'm sure Daniel Henney is like, is that his name, right? Daniel Henney.
Like,
yeah. I'm sure he's hitting the weights and taking some protein powder. All right. So,
I mean, dude,
I've seen him on Instagram. He is, first of all, I mean, but again, to be fair on the cover, he does look like he's supposed to be like, a bodybuilder, huge. I mean, like stacked huge. Some of that's armor and stuff like that. Yeah,
that Gluteus Maximus is the Gluteus Maximus that can ride again on the winds of time. So I'll go ahead and say it. All right, it's good Gluteus Maximus. Anyway, yeah, gosh, what else we got? Man, we got tons. We're so pumped to see everybody in here. Like, this is so cool. I'm really glad everyone is in here and
this is crazy. Over 100 people, which is insane.
This is wild.
To be.
Hey Matt, did you see the news? So like, I guess it was the number one watched premiere, right? So
yes.
The Wheel of Time, which that was cool. Kudos to them. That's a good thing to have for this year. And it's awesome. So
it's great.
Something fun to shift gears here. What about that? Like, so that Emmonsfield innocence in Nynaeve, when she's sitting around the campfire and the warders, you had a couple of them like one laying between the other guy's legs, like he's leaning back, like, I mean, real intimate, real close. And they're hinting at it with Moraine and Lan. Someone mentioned something about holding the pinky. Someone was like, I don't know what that was about. Yeah. Did you see that? I don't know what that's about. I don't know. I didn't catch any of that. So if there's other things we're not catching, leave us a comment. But I thought it was kind of cool to see the intimacy between all the warders, and then they're proud. The fact that they're proud about being a warder to these Aes Sedai just was so cool to me, man. I thought that's the way to go. Like, they are servants. Oh, and then we have to talk about, because we haven't talked about this yet, the Aes Sedai factions, the plotting between them.
Beginning to go.
Like the Reds, like Leandrin dissing Moraine, the Greens coming to Moraine and saying, what are you up to? What do you think? Is this the dragon? Leandrin trying to say, I'm going to gentle this guy. And I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Did she drop the shield? The big question early on was, did she drop that shield a little bit so he purposely could break out? Yeah. What do you think?
Maybe.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
So I can tell you right now, I do think once we get to the tower and the Ajahs get explained, I do think we will in season one be told about the possibility of Black Ajah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you have to, just to sort of, just because, again, this was an interesting experience watching it with people who know nothing about it, asking questions, like, well, wait, what's this? What's this? What's going on here? What's going on here? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah, interesting. Katie bringing up poly homosexual relationships are so beautifully normalized. Yeah, there doesn't feel to be any awkwardness. I mean, other than, like, really it's the Emmons Fielders who kind of, even Rand takes that thing with Matt in stride, right? He takes that in stride. It's awesome. I think it's...
Yeah, it's always the hero's journey. Emmon 5 leaves, loses innocence, Game of Thrones, Starks left Winterfell, Tolkien, Hobbits leave, Expanse. It's all about the journey, man.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. It's all about the journey.
Yeah. No, we are. And we're on one, man. This is the crazy thing. Like we've seen stuff that I didn't think we would see. Like Matt, can I just for a second?
Yeah, hold on. Go ahead.
Oh, what?
But there is something we haven't talked about that we need to talk about. And somebody else brought it up in chat, and Mark here brought it up as well. And Mark Brunetti here. Great question. I don't know if you asked this earlier, Mark, but somebody else did as well. Hey, throw this question out there for the fans. Cause it is said, remember when Lan is talking to Moraine about Loghain and about how, and she's like asking and wondering about him, is he more powerful than Egwene?
So this question,
he says, he asked that.
Egwene more powerful than Loghain. Who said that in this episode?
Lan asks Moraine, when they're talking about Loghain, is he more powerful than Egwene?
And she said, yes.
I have to go back and look.
Or it's just posed. It's just a question.
I don't know that. I don't know that she really. She might have even answered, I don't know.
Okay. Gotcha.
But it's just the fact that the question is posed.
Well, and this is what we're going to get into. We will get
this early on too.
Yeah, we'll get into kind of the power, like the leveling. The different power levels for sure, because we know that Nynaeve, Egwene, even Elaine, Avienda, all this stuff later on, they're very, very powerful. And if you listen to the book, they're often you can get sort of a sense of who is more powerful than the other person. And that's kind of a fun thing to get into. It's sort of like your Dungeons and Dragons, power levels, which is cool. We talk about it with Jedi all the time is, who's more powerful, Yoda or Mace Windu, right?
Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
It's fun. Those are fun conversations to have. And I'm excited to see them kind of do that a little bit in terms of this group. And you know what? Since that was brought up, we're talking about Loghain. I wanted to mention, I am just blown away that they went with the whole, did he not seem kind of Christ-like? Like, as in, like, he was not Christ-like. I shouldn't say it that way, I guess. But just his voice, the tone of his voice was soft. And it was sort of welcoming and sort of like, they should be with me. That is moving forward with the dragon and male channelers. It gives us sympathy for them. Tom gave us sympathy for them. Now we have characters who could be male channelers, and we don't want to see Leandrin do this. We also don't even know what a trial would look like. They kind of avoided that, which I think is probably a good thing. I think it's not much of a trial. It's, can you channel? Okay. You're done. So yeah.
Yeah. I loved it, actually. It does end any talk. Remember, we were having a lot of talk about, like, wow, it seems like they're really going to make Loghain a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the possibility, like, man, who knows what way they're going to go with him? Like, we were talking, he might not get gentled. Well, okay, they did do that. So.
Right. they did. Yeah, so... he's going to go back to the tower, which is what happens. He goes back to the tower. He is there before the split. So he'll be around, most likely, we're guessing. But yeah, in his life, I mean, we now know that people are with Owen's story and Tom telling us about that, we know there's a high likelihood he could kill himself or his life just withers away a little bit. He loses the will to live or something. So that's something to keep an eye on as we watch him. Yeah, he's guarded and walked around the White Tower, and you know, for that very thing. But yeah.
So who all do you think we're gonna? So next episode, let's dive into next episode a little bit.
Okay.
So next episode, we think, by the way, we're going to be seeing, the episode is called Blood Calls Blood. Perrin and Egwene run into a familiar face. Matt and Rand see strange ones. Moraine and Lan mourn their loss. So we already think we know a little bit what's going to happen with Moraine and Lan. We already think we know we're going to maybe possibly, this is where we're running to the White Cloaks again. Yeah. Matt and Rand see strange faces. What do we think is happening there? So it's not just like, oh, hey, they go to a new location or something. They see strange faces.
So
are we going to run into somebody we don't know? What are we going to do?
Oh my God. Guys, what if they do something with like the realm? There's no way. What if they take, I don't know. What's it mean by strange? What does it say exactly?
That's exactly. It says Perrin and Egwene run into a familiar face. Matt and Rand see strange ones. That's all it says.
Strange ones. That makes me think that they're pretty damn strange.
Ogier, like, loyal. Do we mean loyal next episode?
Okay. Now would be,
you know, maybe
that would be cool.
Maybe by the way, actually,
sorry, thanks guys for reeling us in.
Hold on, hear me out. Oh, hold on. I think we're meeting Min next episode.
Okay.
So I'm actually thinking here, and there is supposed to be a big Aiel flashback at some point. Remember, that's got to be it. Maybe it's possible they do get to Tar Valon next episode, and maybe this is when we meet Min, and maybe this is when we meet Loyal.
Okay. Yeah.
Because remember, they don't go to Camelin, right? At least we don't think they do. They actually still could, because the way look at the way they did Gildan, right?
Sure.
Or Gael'don, as they're calling, where they're just like, hey, this is Gael'don. It's probably the same place they filmed Tar Valon.
Sure.
But they just like, but because they sort of use computer graphics and all this stuff, and then it's literally just like one little walkway.
Right.
You could do that again and just say, we're in Camelin. If you wanted to keep it accurate, I don't know that you need to, because I think it's still just fine to just simply meet them in Tar Valon. Like, it's not, to me, it's not that big of a deal, because we're not going to see Loghain there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe next episode is where we meet Min and we meet Loyal.
Yeah. And they could be, strange ones. I mean, he's strange. She's a little strange. Right. She can see things around.
Well,
people.
I think it's just we're getting introduced to new characters.
Strangers. Yeah. Just strangers along the way. Sure. I think that'd be great. We have to bring Loyal in at some point. Have to. Been waiting for him. So yeah, I'm with you on that. So
the episode is called Blood Calls Blood. Any significance there, S?
Yeah, Blood Calls to Blood. I think that's something that's like later on in the series. Let me see though. I don't know if there's Blood Calls to Blood, so it'd be thinking like relationships, you're thinking like, what do you guys think? Leave us a comment about that one. Blood Calls to Blood.
Oh, no, let me see here. They first meet. Yes. Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, they first meet. Wow, there's so much. The chat's like, there's so much in the chat. They first meet Min and Baerlon, and they skip that. Yes, but we do know that Min has been cast, and there's leaked photos showing Rand talking to Min.
See, okay, this is what I thought. So, when Padon Fain is captured and he writes on the wall, I know, is that what that is? So to me, it's like, I don't know that they go that far. That's next episode. Let me check.
It'd be episode five. I mean, here, hold on again.
Like,
so
do we go to Fall episode... Dara?
No.
They just write that somewhere in Tar Valon. Like, that's just.
Yeah. Could be.
Let me see.
We have there's the ways we have to get back to an episode. Wolf Brother, Blood Calls Blood, which could be Perrin's thing. Maybe we get a little more on the wolves.
Oh well.
But yeah, I think we're going to Tar Valon for potentially two episodes, which will be the next one. And then I think Rand and Matt will get there first. And then we will run into, and by the way, the next two episodes were directed by the same. So every episode, like it'd be like the episodes 1 and 2 are directed by the same person. 3 and 4 are directed by the same person. And so it continues down that path. So the next episode, the next two episodes, excuse me, are directed by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So just sort of keep that in mind that it's almost like these two episodes go together and then the next two episodes go together. They feel different. Well, let me tell you, whoever this is, Wayne Yip.
Yeah.
He did 3 and 4. He knocked it out.
Hey, he's also
he knocked it out of the park, man, because these episodes have been great.
He directed some of the season 1 Lord of the Rings episodes.
He's done a few episodes of Doctor Who as well. So
yeah. Cool. I think, yeah, everyone's right. So like that whole blood calls to blood situation is Varen kind of telling the Amyrlin Seat that what was written on that wall was
Yeah. So yeah, Carrie M asked a question here. So Tarvala instead of Caemlyn. Yeah, it's pretty much Rafe has pretty much confirmed we're not going to Caemlyn this season, just because he talks about, well, you can really only film in so many locations and all of this stuff, and so we can't necessarily hit every city. I think it's possible we could still go to Caemlyn, but they would do it in the same way where they probably, if like today's episode, we technically went to Gael'don, right?
Sure.
But it's literally like it's like Loghain's talking to that guy who ends up serving him, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're basically showing a little bit of a city. It's obvious there's computer graphics over it and all this stuff, but technically we're in Gael'don, or as I still call it, because it's how it's pronounced in the books, Gael'don. So you could still do that if you wanted it, but they probably film it all in whatever city it is that they film Tarvalin in. Wherever they're on set filming, you could still do that. And it could be like a room or whatever, or a street. And you just say, we're in Caemlyn, if you want to go that route. I don't know that we're gonna, but I do think it's just all going to be Tarvalin. I think it'll be fine to meet Min and Loial there. I don't think it changes. It doesn't really change anything for them to meet them there.
Yeah, I totally think this whole the title is somebody said it's a misdirect. They think it's trying to throw us off a little bit, and it could just be something about, you know, the old blood or family connections or relationships, something. Because right. Yeah, unless they're moving Pot on Fane arc into something sooner, I don't know. But hey, while I have this many people, does anyone have a thought or a theory on the Aiel gem, the stone that Matt took? He still has that, I think, right? He took that off of the Aiel. And Matt, they show it 3 or 4 times. They show it from the back, from the side, up front. He picks it up, looks at it like it's the freaking One Ring, and puts it in his pocket. It's not just something. It's not just coin. It's important. I don't know what it is, but it's something. Sorry.
Yeah. When do you think we're seeing Pot on Fane again?
I think, like you said, when you originally said he could be a peddler coming across like some white cloaks or even some of the tinkers, I thought, oh, dang, probably Tarvalin though. I mean, it could be Tarvalin. It could be Fal'Dara. He could just be somebody who shows up in that episode alone to steal something or to make trouble. I mean,
okay. Well, right. So, okay. So then the next two episodes, by the way, so we have episode descriptions for 6. So we have episode description for 5, 6, and 7. So 5 again, which is next week, Perrin and Egwene run into a familiar face. Matt and Rand see strange ones, which I think I'm on board with saying we're going to see Min and Loial. Then it says Moraine and Lan mourn their loss. Now, we've already seen some of that in the trailer, right? With them, Stepan, he's crying over, you know, the loss of his Aes Sedai. And I think that's where we're going to go. Now, episode 6 is titled The Flame of Tarvalin. Moraine faces the consequences of her actions. Matt faces the darkness in himself. Egwene faces the most powerful woman in the world. Now, I think episode 6, we're all back together in Tarvalin. I think Matt's healing of the dagger is going to go way quicker.
Sure. Yeah, it's just going to be over and done. Separate him, keep the dagger in the tower. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, then again, it's like, do you see, because that's one of the things where it's like, I think maybe you really have to push that next episode with like the Rand and Matt storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it is pretty quick. I mean, it's not necessarily super long in the books, right?
Yeah.
That it happens. I mean, by book three, we're pretty much done with it. So I don't know. Yeah, Matt's getting sicker way faster than in the books. Technically thinking about where we're at right now, we're kind of halfway through the Eye of the World already.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know how they're gonna do. I don't know how they're gonna do that. How they're gonna do Matt's sickness, but maybe Matt faces it. Remember, they can't just heal him right away. So that could be something they explore too. Then it says for episode six that Egwene faces the most powerful woman in the world. I think she's going to be having a conversation with Suwan, because we know we're going to meet Suwan at some point.
Yeah.
We've seen it in the trailers.
For sure. She gets a sense of what this is like coming into the White Tower, being a novice, going through some training, getting tested, all that good stuff. I think for sure we'll start to understand that. And I think Taviren will be brought up again too at some point. You got to bring up the Taviren factor.
I do too. And then so episode seven is called The Dark Along the Ways, which seems perfect. That's like the whole Waygate has been the sort of, you know, all the cover art, all the promotional material. Moraine and her charges are diverted from their path by an unexpected encounter. So we're going to see Mashin.
The Black Wind.
What's it called? The Black Wind. What's it called? What are they? Whatever.
Machin Shin.
Machin Shin. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't say.
I know.
I can barely talk
say anything right now. Yeah. The diversion reveals many things. Moraine's true goal, lands past the fractures that have grown in the group, and the identity of the Dragon Reborn. The Machin Shin. Yes. Which puts us right at about the end of the Eye of the World. So maybe we're really only getting through book one in season one.
Yeah. Well, Ryan brings up a really good point. And shout out to our one of our bannermen over from Bend the Knee, baby. Do we get a lot more info on the Dark One and the Forsaken in the next episode? If they're going to play a big role in the season finale, we have to move forward quickly now, right? I mean, that's kind of that's a great question because we've heard about the Dark One. Are we going to hear about the Forsaken? Are we going to face them? Like, or is it going to be, you just face the Dark One and it's Balzamon and that's not really the Dark One? You know, I mean, are they going to do that, or are his servants going to show up? I think, because they scared the crap out of me with Dana. When Dana showed up, I was like, holy smokes, that's freaking Lanfear or somebody. We're freaking dead. We're goners, you know? But so great question, Ryan. I like that.
Right, because the interesting thing is, man, I think we thought we were going to be further into the Great Hunt.
Sure.
I don't know. It's
but that's okay.
The pacing is like so far, I guess what I feel like is, plot wise, we're kind of on pace, right? Character development, at least in terms of character development and also like power development, is way further ahead.
Mm-hmm. they are moving it pretty.
So maybe we spend less time than we do in, because at some point you have to start cutting stuff out. So, well,
Mark brings up a good point. I you and I have talked about this a lot. We think the Great Hunt can be trimmed down quite a bit.
I think you can in season two, I feel like you could legitimately combine, and we've said this before, I think you could combine both the Great Hunt and the Dragon Reborn, which are shorter books. The Dragon Reborn, I believe, is the shortest book in this season. I don't know that we are getting the Sean Channon episode in season one.
Hold on. Yes, Katie, great question. I don't think probably season two. Okay, guys, this is why we do the comments. I freaking love you guys. Dark Ones taint here. Tinfoil hat time. I think they'll slightly tweak the eye to have it somehow trigger the release of the Forsaken.
That could be cool.
That would be kind of cool. Like, if you're going to make a change, like, have them go there to try to stop the Dark One from something, and it actually, you know.
Who's our villain? Who's our main villain in season one going to end up being?
Well, yeah, again, Loghain's done. He's in, he's out, he's done. We've seen in the dreams. So now they have to come to Tarballon.
We've seen Balzamon in the dreams a few times. Yeah,
they have to talk about this more now. They have to get everyone back and say, you saw this, you heard this. Moraine needs to say that line that, like, the wheel is weaving a web of destiny. She sees these things forming, and they need to take action. The tower needs to take action.
This is a great thing, and a lot of people in the chat are agreeing with this. It reminds me of, as I know you've watched this show, Supernatural, right?
Yeah.
Remember in season two of Supernatural, which I don't know if you guys have ever seen it or not. I sort of liked it. It goes way too long. It's like 15 seasons. Really should have stopped after like season five. But the first five seasons of that show are like freaking fantastic. Now in season two of Supernatural, remember there's like a demon. It's like the demon hunters and all this stuff. The Winchester boys. Mm-hmm. They're trying to, like, they have to go basically open like the gates of hell because they're trying to kick back, right? Like this demon, like the yellow eyed demon or whatever. And remember, they end up sort of taking him out. But in doing so, they like open it up and like they release all these people. That could be a way you could do it.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. That I think that'd be kind of cool. That's kind of a cool way. Something triggers something else and boom.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Wheel of Time for life. Saying they are filming season two now. Could he have been talking about that? Yeah, they are filming season two right now. And we know Elaine is cast, and they haven't announced specific roles for a few actors, but one of them pretty much looks like the exact book representation of Varen Sedai. Sure. And then the other one is, I don't know her name, but she's a pretty gorgeous actress.
Yeah.
She's got long black hair.
Yeah.
She fits for me she looks like she's probably in like either her early 30s, or I think she's really looks like she's more in her sort of like late 20s, which I think is the perfect casting for Celine / Lanfear. You need someone, you need that sort of late 20s, early 30s, who can be young enough to play Celine, yet the right age to play Lanfear.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's going to be huge. I think that we're spot on with that casting. A lot of people were saying that's probably what we're looking at. By the way, shout out to the Dusty Wheel, who is the official after show, I think on Tuesdays. So I wanted to mention that he brings on a lot of actors and stuff. And honestly, Matt Hatch is the man, character in the story. I've followed his show for a long time, and I love the Dusty Wheel. So give him all the love that you
absolutely
can.
So where's he at? Did he comment here?
No.
Oh, I was like, wow.
Although we did have Lauren on last time, we had a couple other Wheel of Time content creators. I'm checking my Twitter in case anybody, you know, sends us a message or something. Just that kind of thing. Because we're going to be doing these every week. So a lot of fun.
Yeah, give me. Okay, hold on. Let me do this real quick before I jack it all up.
Oh, no. The wheel is. Guys. Okay, while Matt's pulling this up real quick, Moraine, I don't know if you guys caught this part about the wheel turning and lives coming and going. There was something Moraine said that I felt strange, actually, in this episode.
Hold on. It's freaking out.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. What? Oh, my.
There we go. Sorry. I was freaking out.
Like, oh, geez.
I just gave somebody a seizure.
Somebody's like, God.
Oh, man. Hold on. There we go. Sorry. StreamYard freaking out. Okay. So this is the actress. Her name is Sierra Coveney, right?
Okay.
And she hasn't. So there's been a few, right? So, yeah. So here's the act. Okay. So this actress right here. Sorry. This is Sierra Coveney. She is officially cast as. Sorry about the flicker, guys. There's a bit of flicker. I'm sure I just gave like five. So anyway, so this is our Elaine. She has officially been cast as Elaine. And here we have, I believe, Mira Saul is her name. Yeah. And she has not been given a name as of yet. But I think to me, this is totally Varen Sedai. And that's what everyone, I remember when it first happened, everyone's like, this has got to be Varen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I heard that as well. Yeah. One of those was.
And then right here is the one that everyone, Natasha O'Keefe.
Right. It's a debate on who this is.
To me, it's totally Lanfear. Totally Lanfear.
Lanfear. Okay. Yeah. Has that been confirmed anywhere, guys?
I don't believe it has.
Somebody said Elida. They thought it might be.
Could be.
Yeah. Elida. It'd be kind of cool.
Oh, so that's her. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. To me, that looks like Lanfear, man.
Okay, here we go. Thane steals the dagger in Tarvalin. He runs up to the eye. They still need to get Matt completely healed. They follow him, use the ways, get to Faldara, attacked by Trollocs. They need to get to the eye. There has to be a need. There's got to be something that draws them to the eye of the world for the dragon's banner. The Horn of Valir, baby, let's go. Let's blow that bad boy. Let's get those heroes out here.
That's totally the ending. See, and again, we've talked about this. Season two, I think you can blend them. I think you can blend the Dragon Reborn and you just mix Faldara and Tyr.
Sure.
Rand's fighting inside, right, with Kalendor. And on the outside, there's a big battle going on, and you blow the Horn of Valir.
Yeah. God, that'd be awesome. I know, but we say it's awesome. People are like, oh, it's not happening. I mean, again, we're trying to make it fit in these
let me pull. There's hold on. There's another. I'll pull this up too. There's a graph actually that's like really awesome, and it sort of shows. I'm gonna screen share again here. Hopefully, it does not flicker.
God.
Okay. Thank God. That's literally what I was like. Jesus. Yeah. Okay. So this is it's a word count of each of the books. So the Eye of the World is sort of right here, right? I guess you can use it as our baseline. So if we use this as a baseline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just say that the Eye of the World is one season, okay? Well, the next two books, I guess, are not the shortest. But if you can sort of blend these into being one book, which would be The Great Hunt and the Dragon Reborn, which I think you could, then you can do that as a season. Now, the tricky part is when you get to the next block, because those are the three biggest books, which is Massive. The Shadow Rising, The Fires of Heaven, and Lords of Chaos, which I'm not even into yet. But having read them, once you get past The Great Hunt and The Dragon Reborn, you start to get into the territory in which characters start not showing up, or showing up for like frequent bits of time. And so then you begin to sort of like, for example, we just read for our podcast, The Fires of Heaven. Perrin isn't even in the book at all. So what are you going to do with Perrin roughly season three to season four? Well, you start pulling stuff from this book and this book and this book and this book and this book. And so I think eventually we'll sort of be able to do it.
Matt, I mean, you bring up an interesting point. Like, there's whole books where characters are not in it, right?
Right. I mean, so these. I mean,
can this, adapt this those block, season by season.
Exactly. This block down here, right, which is Path of Daggers. What is that? Winter's Heart, and then Crossroads of Twilight. I mean, these are pretty short books. All three of these are pretty short. Now, I haven't read them, so I don't know what because we're not there yet in the podcast yet. I don't know what you can pull of that and what you can't. But to me, I mean, just knowing from I spend a lot of time on the Reddit, and everyone's over there is really sort of good at not spoiling stuff. Memory of Light to me seems like it has to be its own season, and there's just no way around it.
From everything
I've seen in the subreddit, which is really good at not spoiling stuff, the Wheel of Time subreddits, is that A Memory of Light simply has to be its own.
Oh yeah,
its own season, and there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, it's its own thing, 100%. Yeah, for sure. A lot of that stuff that can be condensed. Some people call it the slog, where there's just a lot of, you know, narrating different scenes and expanding on people's thoughts and a lot of stuff that they can cut out, and they will do that.
So that's ultimately what we have to get to and where we have to go.
Yeah.
So okay, well, I think I think it's probably okay at this time, we're not gonna leave the live stream, But Ez and I are recording our audio this just for our podcast. Our general podcast. So we're going to do an outro here. We're still going to hang out on YouTube, but we're just going to sort of get our podcast outro. It just makes it easier for recording since we're doing this live. So
and while we have everyone here, by the way, we do have episodes on Apple podcast, right? We've got some Apple Premiere stuff over there for folks. We've got stuff on Patreon, live hangouts, we're bringing on the show, all that good stuff. Please like, please subscribe. All those good things are really important and they're helpful. They help our podcast quite a bit. So
absolutely. So all in all, love the episode. For those of you guys hanging out here on YouTube, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to do a quick outro for our podcast. So with that, we'd like to thank you guys for listening, hanging out with us here on Heroes of the Horn. We super appreciate it, guys, because this whole season, this whole show has been absolutely fan-freaking-tastic. So we will see you guys next week for episode 5, which is Blood Calls Blood. And remember that the grave is no bar to our call.